US and Israel as they reached none of their objectives. The leader said the US and Israel had planned for a war that would incite the nation and pit them against the establishment, but to no avail. Regarding regional and international issues, the leader said wherever America has intervened, the outcome has been war, genocide, destruction and displacement. He said Israeli attacks on Lebanon, Syria, Gaza and the West Bank are all backed up by the US, adding that the Tel Aviv regime would not be able to commit those crimes without Washington's support. Ayatollah Khamenei described the head of the Zionist regime as the most hated individual in the world. University professor and political analyst Fuad Izzedi says the US used negotiations as a deceptive tactic against Iran back in June.
Ayatollah Khamenei or any other officials in Iran have never dismissed dialogue. Iran was in the middle of negotiations with the other side when they attacked. They called the attack Midnight Hammer. They took that hammer and smashed the negotiation table. The other side has used negotiations, dialogue, as a deception operation against Iran, as we saw with the June attacks. Iran has always said that Iran is interested in resolving these issues that the U.S. has with Iran. And Ayatollah Khamenei consistently has said that we shouldn't be trusting the Americans because the nature of the government that you have in Washington, the propaganda on the other side is that Iran is not interested in dialogue. Iran has always been interested in making sure that whatever difficulties Iran and U.S. have, it's resolved through peaceful means. It is the other side that starts negotiations and attacks Iran in the middle of negotiations. And this is what I think Ayatollah Khamenei has been trying to highlight in his speech last night.
Iran has strongly condemned the escalating violence against Palestinians by Israeli forces and settlers in the occupied West Bank. Foreign Ministry spokesperson Ismail Baghaei pointed to military raids and settler attacks in Nablus and Jenin, as well as arbitrary arrest and demolition of homes. He called for actions by the international community against brutal Israeli crimes in those areas. Baghaei stressed that these crimes should be recorded as crimes against humanity. He urged the United Nations and the UN Human Rights Council to investigate gross violation of Palestinian rights. The Iranian Foreign Ministry spokesperson said those who commit crimes against Palestinians in the West Bank should be put on trial and punished. Israeli forces have carried out fresh raids in multiple towns and villages in the occupied West Bank, including areas in Al-Khalil, Ramallah, Silbat and Tubas. To hear more about the details of the incursions, we were earlier joined by our West Bank correspondent, Neka Hamet.
Most of the Palestinian cities were raided tonight in the occupied West Bank. And let's start from the ongoing military aggression. The five pillars or the five rocks that this military aggression is taking place to the provenance of Tubas, Tammun, Aqaba, and Al-Far'a refugee camp and Tayassir, all in the northern part of the occupied West Bank. For the day three of this military aggression, the Israeli forces have raided Al-Far'a refugee camp tonight after the Israeli forces used to be around Al-Far'a refugee camp, controlling the entrances and the exits of this place. Now, since the hours of the morning, they have moved into Al-Far'a refugee camp, where they have raided many homes, and they have deployed large numbers of soldiers in the alleys of the refugee camp. 162 Palestinians have been fieldly interrogated and held for hours inside field interrogations that was established by the Israeli forces inside Tubas, and then later most of them were released, but many of them are still detained, and according to local resources, almost four have been abducted and moved towards Israeli prisons and military bases.
Israeli forces have launched new attacks in Gaza, further violating the ceasefire agreement In the war-ravaged territory, at least one Palestinian has been killed in a drone strike on Khan Yunis, which has been the focus of IOF attacks since the truce took effect. Earlier, our correspondent in Gaza, Gada Ibrahim, joined us for the latest Israeli violations.
The Israeli violations of the U.S. brokered ceasefire agreement are continuous and continuously ravaging the eastern parts of Gaza City and the eastern parts of Khan Yunis as well. Since the early hours of the morning, the airstrikes are non-stop on the eastern parts of Khan Yunis, particularly the outskirts of Bani Sela and Al-Qarara. And the latest of these attacks resulted in one Palestinian martyr that was killed by a drone attack that targeted him while he was actually checking on his home in the eastern parts of Khan Yunis city. Again, these attacks are really very continuous and are non-stop since the beginning of the U.S. brokered ceasefire agreement until this moment. Every day, more attacks are ravaging the eastern parts of Khan Yunis city, and Khan Yunis is the focal point of the Israeli attacks since day one of this agreement. Again, more attacks are also taking place at behind the so-called yellow line in the eastern parts of Deir al-Balah city, the eastern parts of Al Bridge refugee camp, and also the eastern parts of Gaza city like Ash-Shuja'iyah and Ash-Sha'af and Al-Tufah neighborhoods in the eastern parts of Gaza city. In the north also, Beit Lahia is also subjected to heavy artillery shelling and airstrikes around the hour that is coupled with the Israeli drone attacks and the Israeli fire from the vehicles and from the drones towards the people who are trying to return to their areas or those who are actually existing in these areas behind the so-called yellow line. Since the beginning of this ceasefire until now, we are talking about at least 351 Palestinians killed as a result of these attacks.
At least 13 people have been killed in Israeli artillery and missile strikes targeting a Damascus suburb in Syria. A number of others have also been wounded in the attacks in the town of Beit Jinn. Reports say the artillery and missile strikes took place after clashes erupted between the town's residents and invading Israeli forces. The Tel Aviv regime sources say Israeli troops arrested three Syrians before withdrawing. The Israeli army frequently carries out ground incursions into Syrian territory in Qunaitre province in the occupied Golan Heights and Damascus countryside governorates. For more on this, I'm now joined by Mohsen Saleh, academic and political commentator, joining us from Beirut. Dr. Saleh, very good to have you on the program. What is the significance, you know, in now near daily attacks against Lebanon and now this huge attack on Syria?
I would say that the Israelis should stop being the security or the mercenary for the Western and for killing the peoples in Syria and in Lebanon and in Palestine, especially today and yesterday in Syria. They are invading, actually conquering the Syrian territories until they reach the Beit Jinn. Beit Jinn, this is a place where most of the people, they hate the Israelis, they hate the Zionists. They found in themselves the dignity in order to defend their territories in spite of the absence of the state of the in Syria. And after the Americans and the Israelis, after establishing the way for chaos, for this division in Syria, they found the road paved for them. But some people in Beit Jinn and others in Syria, they find their dignity and their honor in order to combat and confront the Israelis to preserve their identity, their Syrian identity, their Arab and Muslim identity, and fighting the Israelis. So this was a battle against the Israelis in Beit Jinn, and the Israelis they found themselves in a very hard and difficult position. So they called for the air force and for the drones in order to help them. In spite of the vagueness of the of the region, and the people, they don't have their the army and the artillery and all these and missiles in order to fight the Israelis, but they have made a web for them, and I guess they succeeded in killing many Israelis, between them lieutenants and others. While this will open the way for other Syrians in order not to submit and surrender to the Israelis, and will open the way for fighting and resisting the Israeli occupation in spite of the declarations of Tom Barrack, who said that Syria will have naturalization with Israelis, and in spite of the Americans' insistence on having this Abraham Accord with the Syrians in order to also press Lebanon to join this accord.
Right, and I wanted to talk to Dr. Saleh about the Syrian government's stance on this, because we have seen that Abu Mohammed al-Jolani is trying to get a security pact, a security deal with the Israeli regime, despite all of these aggressions. How do you think these are going to be affected by such aggressions?
Well, I guess the Syrian authorities, or new authorities, who facilitated the way for these Israeli attacks and aggressions every day and every night, who are occupying more lands from Syria, I guess they should be hesitant, at least hesitant, if they don't fight. So they should not surrender and sign for such accord in order to keep the authority between in their hand. I guess it's about time for a dignified step in order to establish a new authority based on dignity and preservation of the country, of the state, and the territories. The Israelis have touched the core essence of the sovereignty of the Syrian state. Syrian state should retreat from any security agreements with the Israelis, because the Israelis are still occupying lands, new lands, not from in Golan Heights, but most of the southern part of Syria and the western part of the south, and also the Sheikh Mountain. Also, they have occupied it. So we are watching a kind of greediness and occupation for a long time. And the Israelis, Katz and others, they say, they declare it overtly that they will not withdraw from the Syrian territories. And in fact, the Israelis behave as if they are the masters of the region, in spite of the American look and trying to find a solution. There would be no solution, there would be no peace accords with the occupiers, whatever, either in Palestine or in Syria or in Lebanon. So the battle is an open battle, an open war against this aggression.
Indeed, interesting to have your perspective, Dr. Saleh Mohsen Saleh, academic and political commentator, joining us from Beirut. The Vice President of the European Commission has lashed out at the US, accusing Washington of blackmail in trade talks. Teresa Ribeiro made the rebuke after the US Commerce Secretary Howard Lutnick said Washington might ease steel and aluminium tariffs if the EU reconsidered its digital rules. Europe's antitrust chief pushed back hard, saying Washington is trying to strong-arm the EU into weakening its digital rulebook. She stressed that Europe's digital laws were in place for protecting its citizens and were not a bargaining chip for the US. Washington argues Europe's Digital Market Act, or the DMA, unfairly targets American tech giants, while the EU says it creates fair competition. And that is a wrap for this time's World News. Until next time, it's goodbye from me, Bahman Ray.
today's special.
Assalamu alaikum.
It's special for you. We present to you today. In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful, dear brother and sister, Assalamu alaikum and welcome to a new episode of today's special from IRIB English Radio. Thank you for choosing this program to listen to. And inshallah, this program would be beneficial for you. Today, we're going to speak about modern idolatry.
Yourself, can't you see this wonder spread in front of you? The clouds floating by, the sky so clear and blue, planets in their orbits, the moon and the sun, such perfect harmony. Let's start questioning ourselves, isn't this proof enough for us?
And today is Friday, 7th of Jamadil Thani, 1447 of the Islamic Lunar Hijri calendar, corresponding to the 7th of the month of Azar, 1404 of the Islamic Solar calendar, and the 28th of November, 2025 of the Christian Gregorian calendar. This is chapter Al-Anfal, verse 2 from the Holy Quran, for blessing and for knowing more about these verses we'll listen to.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Innamal mu'minuna alladhina idha dhukirallahu wajilat qulubuhum wa idha tuliyat 'alayhim ayatuhu zadatuhum imana. وَإِذَا تُلِيَتْ عَلَيْهِمْ آيَاتُهُ زَادَتْهُمْ إِيمَانًا وَعَلَىٰ رَبِّهِمْ يَتَوَكَّلُونَ.
The believers are only those who, when Allah is mentioned, their hearts become fearful, and when His verses are recited to them, it increases them in faith, and upon their Lord they rely.
لا إله إلا الله لا إله إلا الله.
Bless your day with contemplation on the verses of the Holy Quran.
The true believers are those who are in awe of Allah because of His glorification and veneration. This is when the speech is delivered upon Allah's justice, retribution, and power. They dread, and when the speech is about His bounties, kindness, graces, and rewards, they feel peace in themselves. Thus, there is no contrast between these two verses, because fear relates to the remembrance of Allah's retribution and peace, but peace and rest relates to the remembrance of Allah's forgiveness and kindness.
My life is not the same. When I'm too concerned by what they say, why should I wanna have you? To doubt you would be the worst mistake. Deep inside I know, amidst all the darkness and everything which makes no sense, I know that you exist. Guides me through my darkest nights, shows me right from wrong in a world that often lies. Cause I don't need anyone, anything in life, but you know.
come here. Today we're going to speak about modern idolatry. It's a scary question, but do your actions show you love something else more than you love Allah? Trusting in Allah is more than just sweet words. It's a complete belief that sustenance, success, and blessings come only from Allah. When we place our hope in inanimate objects, the essence of trusting in Allah is displaced. The word shirk in Arabic means regarding someone as the partner of another, and in Sharia terms, it means ascribing a partner or rival to Allah. Prophet Muhammad said, "Whoever dies claiming that Allah has a rival will enter hell."
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. This is Ali, your host. Today we are going to talk about modern idolatry in 2025. People's fascination with such practices to distancing from genuine faith. When people stray from authentic belief, they turn to charms and superstitions, lucky beads, dolls bringing suitors, and so on and so forth. These vanish from mature societies, but some now try to reintroduce them to distract our youth. This is a part of a cultural invasion meant to alienate the young from Islamic beliefs. Feng Shui originates from Buddhist traditions and lacks a divine view of existence. In a sense, it is a form of modern idol worship, while Islam truly values simplicity. The Feng Shui does so superficially. Simplicity is clearly seen in the Prophet Muhammad's and the Imam's lives and the way they ate, dressed, and interacted with people. Feng Shui is incompatible with Islam, and scholars need to inform the public about such deviations, promoting the authentic, enlightening spirit of the Quran and the Prophet's teachings to safeguard society from cultural infiltration. Feng Shui is slowly spreading through society, and religious scholars must prevent its growth by educating people about its true nature. This trend leads humanity away from its divine source and weakens reliance on Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. A person who relies on wooden, metal, or stone symbols from morning to night, what true benefit can he gain?
Special topics for a special program. You can listen today, now and here, IRIB English Radio.
May this moment last forever in your hearts, a day you'll always remember every part.
Today's special.
This feeling of love, just let it grow forever through your life. Bring beautiful years of joy between you till the
loving someone more than Allah is one of the hidden ways of committing shirk or disbelief. If someone's love for a person, job, or material things is greater than their love for Allah, it can become a shirk. For example, skipping salah for work or entertainment, fearing people's opinions more than Allah's commands, loving wealth so much that it leads to dishonesty. Allah says in the Holy Quran, chapter 2, verse 165, those who believe love Allah more than anything else. Again, there was second chapter of the Holy Quran, verse 165. Our love for Allah should be the greatest. Everything else should come after Him.
Oh,
Now, how to protect ourselves from shirk? One way could be keeping righteous company. Being around people who remind you of Allah helps you notice mistakes early. Good friends advise with wisdom when they see something wrong, like superstitious behavior, careless works, or act that resemble shirk. On the other hand, bad company normalizes these acts and may lead you to ignore them. Join gatherings of remembrance, study circles, or online Islamic communities that strengthen faith and understanding.
The point of sujood is to make us humble, then why pray on the carpet? This is not going to make you as humble as placing your forehead on the dust. If you truly want something that will make you humble, that will add to your humility, then place your forehead on the dust, because this is what's difficult for the human being. So this is the first way that sujood makes us humble, and it adds to the morality of the human being, so that when he speaks and engages and interacts with other human beings, he does not interact in an arrogant way. Allah wants us to be humble through sujood. And that humbleness can only be acquired by placing the forehead on the earth, not on the carpet. The second way in which sujood makes us humble is that it reminds us that when we place our forehead on the earth, in the same way when we spoke about the theological benefit of sujood, we said it reminds us of our beginning and end, our aqidah. Likewise, when we place our forehead on the earth, it reminds us that, look, you human being who thinks that you're so great and you're so powerful, you were created from the dust. And one day you will be placed in this grave and you will turn into dust again. So but don't be so arrogant. Don't think you're better than other human beings, because in the same way you were created from dust, they were created from dust. You all have the same origin, so it makes me a humble person. I was created from dust, and he was created from dust. Why am I better than other people? This is the constant reminder of sujood. Be humble. Place your forehead on the earth so that you remember, this was my beginning. I don't care how rich, wealthy I am, how intelligent, smart I am, how powerful I am. At the end of the day, me and a poor peasant living on the street, we were both created from the earth. And we will go back to the earth. So why become so arrogant? Why do you think that you're better than everyone else?
Dear brother and sister, we open a new chapter here, and that was about modern idolatry, one of the great and important phenomena in modern life. I think it's better to continue this interesting topic on the next episodes of today's special from IRIB English Radio. So bear with us, and till then, we leave you in Allah's mercy. Fi amanillah.
لا إله إلا الله الله ربي محمد نبي علي إمامي لا فتى إلا علي علي إمامي علي إمامي علي إمامي لا إله إلا الله الله ربي محمد نبي علي إمامي لا فتى إلا علي علي إمامي علي إمامي علي إمامي
Life is full of choices. Choose the best option. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio. Bazaar.
Our fast-paced lives have been made possible by advanced technologies. On a broader scale, technology has changed major sectors over the past 20 years, including healthcare, telecommunication, energy, and so much more. And knowledge-based products in particular have increased safety, speed, and efficiency in manufacturing sectors. Productions in this field have brought numerous social and economic advantages while generating billions of dollars in revenue, making them indispensable for Iran's economic growth. Hello again and welcome to another edition of Bazaar. I'm your host Ali Reza Ikhtiarzadeh, and this week we're going to look at the activities of Iranian knowledge-based companies. We wanted to see how they help advance various industries and explore why their dedicated efforts are so important to the country. Plus, we will check out some of their contributions to the national economy as a whole. So, let's get started. We hear the phrase knowledge-based enterprise thrown around a lot these days, but some might be wondering what we mean by a knowledge-based company. Interestingly, there is no agreed-on definition because of the broad range of their activities. However, they all have one thing in common. They use intangible assets such as intellectual property and depend heavily on innovation as a competitive source. To get a clearer idea of knowledge-based enterprises, we visited one in Semnan province to understand what they do. With decades of experience, this company specializes in making various types of gas turbines, blades, and parts. All production here begins in the design room. Based on requirements, parts are designed, then a prototype is created using wax. Later, the wax models are used to create precise molds, which are then cast with metal. It produces products along the lines of exports, meaning that all production stages strictly follow national and international standards for quality and safety, making them compatible with international regulations and ready for market destinations abroad. Items manufactured here are used to make gas turbines. It supplies equipment to Iran's national gas distribution grids, which feed gas to cities, oil refineries, power plants, and other industries through pipes that stretch across the country. You might find it interesting that these advanced services and technologies were previously imported. This means there was a certain dependency on foreign companies to get such items, which created a lot of expensive complications. Knowledge-based companies such as the one we just mentioned are among the pioneers of indigenizing this technology, saving the country millions of dollars on imports. The beating heart of any knowledge-based company is its research and development department. Here, new products are created after vast amounts of studies. It is where science and knowledge meet method and production. It is also the place where the quality of products is put to the test. But it's not just a single room. This company has dedicated vast amounts of space to these activities, which also house advanced lab technology and testing equipment. Generally speaking, knowledge-based companies employ specialists and university graduates that handle important tasks. These individuals are the glue or the bridge between knowledge and production. Highly skilled and expert staff is one of the main advantages of this competitive market. Like many businesses across the country, this firm has overcome many obstacles to enjoy its numerous achievements. One such challenge has been the U.S.-imposed sanctions. However, it has come up with its own unique approach, which has turned this obstacle into a massive opportunity. All things considered, there are numerous investment opportunities in this production field, particularly regarding research and development of products that do not currently exist in the market. This knowledge-based company has never stopped eyeing the future. It plans to expand its product list and optimize its production while improving items it already manufactures.
The company we just talked about is one part of the giant puzzle that makes up the knowledge-based industry. The government has supported the shift to a knowledge-based society for decades. Yet this shift has been more apparent in recent years. Such support has paved the way for boosting innovation and scientific progress, leading to many economic advantages.
In 2010, Iran passed several laws promoting and supporting these enterprises, strengthening a legal framework for the growth of the knowledge-based ecosystem. These efforts have paid off in many ways. Since 2013, knowledge-based companies and startups have grown over 140-fold to 7,000 active units today. These firms make thousands of specialized technologies that have massively reduced the country's dependency on foreign imports. Moreover, these businesses have increased developments in the production of medical devices, energy, agriculture, ICT, aircraft maintenance, mining, petrochemicals, biotechnology, and so much more. In fact, Iran also exports a lot of specialized products. According to figures from the National Innovation Fund, tech firms and knowledge-based companies raked in over $5 billion in revenues last year. In total, presently, Iran's knowledge-based ecosystem accounts for more than 3% of the country's gross domestic product. That's going off of statistics from the Vice Presidential Office for Science and Technology. So far, the government has implemented numerous policies and plans to help support knowledge-based companies over the years. These schemes include loans with low interest rates, tax exemptions, and easing commercial license issuances. The goal is to encourage the development of Iran's tech ecosystem and boost lucrative, high-tech productions for exports.
While I take a quick little break here, you go and watch this next segment. I'll be back shortly. Hey everyone, welcome to another special feature of Bazaar. I'm your host Ali Reza, and today we're checking out a knowledge-based company that is saving the country around $20 million worth of imports annually by managing to produce inhaler capsules that we use to import from foreign countries through in-house knowledge, research, and technology. Stay tuned to find out how they did it.
Patients with asthma or dyspnea need to use inhalers to get the prescribed drug into their lungs. That requires not just the active substance of the drug, but also a sort of carrier to take the drug into your lungs before it is fully absorbed in your mouth, before it even gets down your trachea. You will find them mixed with the active substance in inhaler capsules that the inhaler punctures once you put the capsule in, which then you inhale. Our journey begins in the storage room where they bring in the raw material, the active substance for these inhaler capsules in the form of tiotropium bromide. Now, this company produces 45 million of these inhaler capsules annually for the 150 to 200,000 patients in the country that are prescribed to use them. And they use not more than 1 kilogram of this active substance, this tiotropium bromide, to make all of these. The raw material in the form of a small amount of tiotropium bromide, as well as the excipients, which would be the aforementioned carriers that mix with the active substance, are then sent to the production line along with the gelatin capsules themselves, which would later be filled with our formulation substance, the mixture of our active substance and the excipients. So before we get into the actual production line, first they bring the raw material from the storage room to allocate, to determine what amount of each formulation material they need to bring into the production line. So that includes the active substance, the aforementioned tiotropium bromide, and the excipients, which is the additive substances. So once they've allocated the necessary amounts of those, they bring it to the production line. Perhaps the biggest challenge in the production line is the mixing of an infinitely small amount of active substance with the excipients to get a completely uniform mixture of our formulation substance that you would find inside the capsules. The production line would have to be sensitive enough to mix 18 micrograms of tiotropium bromide with 10 milligrams of excipients in a completely uniform way. 1 microgram, by the way, is 1 millionth of a gram. Because this company has managed to fully domesticize the production technology of this particular product, they're able to save 90% of the currency that would otherwise be spent on procuring this very product for the patients in the country through imports. That is $9 million worth of savings, and they're fully capable of doing that because their production line allows for even leftover for exports. Because of the competitive pricing of the aforementioned tiotropium bromide capsules, the value of the potential exports of this product is estimated to be around $30 million. So, what they do is they use a regular inhaler as a normal patient would. They would insert the capsule in it and use a lung simulator. So they would insert the inhaler, and with the help of a vacuum pump attached to this flow regulator attached to the simulator itself, they simulate the flow of a normal human inhale and see how much of the formula is administered to different stages of the lung. Each of these circles has holes on them, which gets exponentially smaller the lower you go, to the point that at the bottom you don't really even see any of these holes. The residue left by the formula through inhale, we test out to see how much of the formula is left on each stage, and then we would see whether the residue left measures up to the amount that we wanted it to, and that pretty much concludes the test, the performance test for our formula. And that also pretty much concludes this episode of Boaz Earth. Till next time, take care and bye-bye. That covers our program for today. On behalf of the entire Bazaar team, thank you for tuning in, and it's bye for now. Until then.
You make it a faith, it's my voice. You've melted both my hands, but never my soul. No, never my soul, it's my voice.
Good evening to all of our listeners. This is Iran Radio from Tehran. Nice to have you with us. I'm your presenter for the next hour. Here are some interesting facts about Islam. Muslim scholar Ibn al-Haytham, known as al-Hazan in Europe, who was born in 965 AD, formulated the scientific method and has been referred to as the world's first true scientist. He is also often regarded as the first theoretical physicists, making a significant contribution to the theory of light and optics. Additionally, he developed what is called celestial mechanics, which led to the eventual work of Europeans such as Copernicus, Galileo, Johannes Kepler, and Isaac Newton. We start off this hour's programs with Hadith of the Day. The program presents a hadith from the Holy Prophet and members of his household, Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them, along with a brief explanation and commentary on the hadith. Then it's time for our radio productions feature. After that, we have leader's speech, presenting an English translation of a selection of the statements and speeches of the honorable leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Khamenei. And we round up this hour's programs with Spotlight, a program which covers the most important events happening in the world today. Stay with us.
Oh Lord, here I am, pleading at your door. Send me your mercy, send me your peace, or I am lost for sure.
Hadith of the day.
Here I am, yearning for your cure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more, no more.
You are listening to the program Hadith of the Day on Iran Radio with Sheikh Danish.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, dear listeners, dear brothers and sisters, salam, and welcome to this episode of the Hadith of the Day. So let's begin with the timeless saying of Imam Ali, peace be upon him. He who does not reform himself cannot reform others. So there are many things around us that we want to correct, that we want to change to the better. But Imam Ali alayhi salam is telling us that we should do it to ourselves first. We should correct ourselves. If we have a problem in our behavior, we should keep our harm from reaching to the society, to others. We can harm people. We can hurt them. We should not let that happen. And this is the first step. And the first step is always, or at least sometimes, the hardest. So take this first step and inshallah, hope that you can change something in others. This short but powerful statement invites us to look inward before we try to change the world around us. Think about it. How often do we want to guide, teach, or even correct others while ignoring our own flaws? Imagine a teacher telling students to be punctual while constantly arriving late, or a parent urging children to avoid anger while losing their own temper daily. The impact is weak. Psychologists call this the principle of congruence. When your words and actions align, people listen and trust you. Without self-reform, we send mixed signals, and mixed signals don't inspire change. Even in leadership studies, researchers emphasize the idea of leading by example. Leaders who model the behavior they want to see are far more effective. In fact, a Harvard Business Review study found that employees are three times more likely to adopt ethical behavior when they see their leaders practicing it, not just preaching it. And science also backs this up on a personal level. Neuroscience research shows that humans are wired to imitate others through mirror neurons. When we see someone act with honesty, discipline, or kindness, our brain mirrors that behavior. But here is the catch. The mirror works best when the behavior is consistent and authentic. Pretending won't leave a lasting impression. Living it will. So inshallah, we would be living examples of what we preach and we expect others to. So, how can we practice Imam Ali's wisdom in our daily lives? A few simple steps. Start small. If you want your children to read more, start by reading yourself, even just 10 minutes a day. That's an example. Self-check. Before correcting someone else, pause and ask, am I living this advice myself? And consistency over perfection. No one is flawless. What matters is steady effort, showing people you're genuinely trying, and reflect daily. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
You just listened to the program Hadith of the Day on Iran Radio with Sheikh Danish.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد
Thank you.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.